Sex is dirty, and so are my next two guests. Sexy and dirty. Sherman Alexie has had a young adult novel banned for being sexy and dirty, and Daniel Handler, who wrote the famous Lemony Snicket series. And your new young adult novel will also be banned, can we assume?
I guess so. I have not heard any word of any banning so far.
Okay. It's called All the Dirty Parts. Much dirtier than Part-Time
Buyer.
Oh,
a lot dirtier than my book. And I got a message just now, a text from my friend. Are you really having a sex talk with Lemony Snicket? And I thought, no. And I said, no, I'm having a sex talk with Daniel Handler.
Like, right.
Two very distinct things.
Yes. Daniel Handler and Sherman Alexie will be on stage together tonight at Town Hall Seattle. The video of that talk will not be available in public school libraries, I hope. Daniel,
Should be. Yeah, it's going to be relatively harmless.
Oh, okay.
I think so, yeah.
Daniel, move up to the microphone a little bit.
Certainly.
I want to hear all
why young people would be interested in going into their school library and watching two people discussing something in a synagogue. That's the real mystery.
Why they would want to see two old gray-haired dads talking about sex.
Mm.
Oh, man, that's hot.
Nothing better. Daniel, your narrator of your book is a teenage boy who doesn't want to tell us about anything besides his sex life. Why are you leaving out the clean parts?
I was curious about trying to tell a story consisting of the kind of open-faced desires and ministrations of a young sexualized boy. And I didn't want to tuck them into some larger narrative where we pretend that the sex is somehow incidental to his imagination or his goings on. And I think also that sexual behavior and imagination can often feel kind of jarring to the rest of the story of your life, not only in youth, but for the rest of your
life. It can take over.
What you think about and what you do can feel extremely separate from how you live the rest of your life. If you're walking down the street and you are suddenly have some image of sexual imagination, you think, where did that is nothing. I'm just walking down the street here. That's all I am doing. And I think that disconnect, that difficulty to immerse it in the rest of your life is something that I was interested in talking about.
Sherman, it sounds like you took the easy way out with your larger narrative and stuff. Part-time diary, the absolutely true diary of a part-time Indian.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I wrote the book. I started writing the book 12 years ago.
Yeah.
And my sons were, 10 and 4? So, you know, they hadn't yet become teenage boys.
Yeah.
And the culture had not changed yet in the way it has in relationship to sex and porn and you know, the phones we have. It's amazing to get a book banned, to get my book banned in this era when every kid has in their hand all the porn ever created.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel old-fashioned in the sense in that book, and nobody ever actually has sex in my books. It gets banned because masturbation is used as a metaphor. That's really why it gets banned. Sex as a metaphor. Yeah, and then the subtext of other things. So, I mean, Daniel's book is a revelation in the sense, as I'm working on the sequel endlessly, the idea of what a teenage boy looks at and sees. And even now, there's a little bit of tension around the book now. I'm hearing my book from liberals about the way I've portrayed my teenage protagonist looking at girls, just like one scene where he watches a girl play volleyball and people are going after a paragraph because he's admiring her calves.
Wow. Objectification.
So, we say calves on the radio?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's interesting to me how over the course of 10 years that some of the things that right wingers object to in my book has become some of the same things that left-wingers object to in my book.
Are those for unrelated reasons, or do you think they circle around to being almost the same thing?
Well, I think of one of my friends describing another one of my friends, and they're both, I mean, a guy in the middle was describing one of my more left-wing friends and one of my more right-wing friends, and the way they come around the circle and bump asses.
That's better put.
Yes.
Yeah.
Why would we ban book sex? You would think that real sex is what is risky and awkward and painful and very beguiling. And why wouldn't we want to put it, pour it into books so we can deal with it there first?
Yeah, that seems fine to me. In fact, I always take umbrage at the idea of any risk in a book where someone says, it's often a writer patting themselves on the back. Like, oh, I really took a risk here. And maybe it's just because I know like some firefighters and things, but I always think, what's the risk again? Review with me. The risk of your book is like someone at the New Yorker doesn't like it. Or
so you never
That's
felt
the big risk that we're talking about.
You never felt minefieldy. I mean, you get into whether the women that this teenage boy has slept with, whether they regret it or were I won't say coerced, but there it seems to me there's a political minefield around who had a good time and who exploited who.
Well, I hope is the realization that sex and its accompanying emotional pratfalls are so fluid as to avoid categorization, including certain rules that we like to set forward. And I think there's now a lot more conversation about coercion and manipulation and consent when it comes to young people's sexuality, which is a positive thing. Certainly the idea that you couldn't talk about it for a long time as it was monstrously happening and often encouraged and even celebrated. And so I think that's a step forward. But it also, whatever we make up about how we'd like young people to go about negotiating their sexual choices is not, in fact, how it's happening. So we can have a fantasy and we can have a goal and we can have kind of rules that we'd like to sit and lay down, but it isn't often happening. And part of that, I think, is that when we are in favor, at least in theory, of unbridling sexuality, of sexual liberation, which is, as a San Franciscan and a Californian, I've watched happen a lot for positive effect, that people can be upfront about what they want and who they want to do it with. But certainly a side effect of that are exactly those people, of that coercion, the, you know, misogyny that happens when you start unbridling male sexuality, and the dark side or the flip side of liberation is often kind of fear and victimization. And I think that when you say like, oh, let the kids have their fun, you want to make sure everyone's having their fun. And there are incidents in this book in which that blurry behavior is questioned. And I think it's not always easy to see what coercion is or what manipulation is. We can see what it definitely is and we can see what it definitely is not. But there's a huge swath here in the middle.
So is there something you want to tell us about the way we in 2017 are thinking about sex and consent?
I just like to ask questions about it, I guess. It's my son is a teenager. One of the sad truths is that it took so long for this book to get published. It took so long for my publisher to think about whether it could be published for young people or not and decide, no, it couldn't, that my son passed from an age when he would not be interested in such thing to prime mortification. He's at the height of mortification age now, that his father has written such a book. Sorry, Otto.
So it's not a young adult? It's not in that section? You said your publisher decided this is not? Okay.
They could. The gatekeepers of young adult literature are concerned precisely about this kind of material. And it's the peg they hung it on. I personally think that all the bannings of Sherman Alexie's book have a lot more to do with nervousness about confronting race in our society and thinking about mascots and all kind of the horrors of colonialization. I think that's, for me, the real reason that people are made uncomfortable by that book. But the peg they hang it on is masturbation. Oh my God, he's talking about masturbation.
Really? Sherman, you think that's what's going on?
Absolutely.
Huh.
I think it's not the masturbation. It's the fact that the hero is a liberal Native American kid.
Do you
what they're banning.
Do either of you remember your first experience with reading about sex? Do we all remember our first time?
Well, interesting. I mean, on the reservation growing up, we had two porn magazines for my entire generation of boys, and they were in a treehouse out in the woods.
You don't mean two publishers. You mean two magazines.
Two magazines. That was the entire extent of the Spokane Indian collection of teenage porn was two magazines. And it was a Playboy and a Penthouse. So
they're in the Smithsonian now.
Yeah. They'll be in the Sherman Alexie Museum. relatively tame. In fact, very tame compared to what a teenage boy has access to now, what a teenage person has access to now. So I vividly remember the how illicit it felt, how secretive, and then the notion of being together as boys, looking at these together, sort of the and just all felt forbidden and interesting, and there were secrets and mystery, and
was part of that you were feeling desirous next to boys?
That was fine.
Okay, that was not
the problem.
I have
no issue with that. Okay. You know, I'm 82% straight.
Okay.
So, but that's part of the thrill, though. In fact, was the fact that you were with other boys.
Uh-huh.
Exploring that together. I mean, you have in Daniel's book. There's a notion of masturbating together as boys.
Yep.
Well, the lead character ends up in something of a sexual relationship with his best friend. That is certainly a widely documented and agreed upon aspect of life that is once again eludes the categories that we have for it. Like heteroflexibility is kind of the current term du jour for that kind of behavior. But I think even that is not accurate. I mean, it centralizes heterosexuality for one thing, which is not mm-hmm. necessarily what's going on. But I think what goes on there is very kind of loose and fluid. And it's some of the, this book has just been published, but some of the murmurs of dissent around it have been from queer critics who are saying, wait a minute, I thought we agreed that how we were going to teach young people about queer behavior was kind of more love stories between boys to prove that everything's nice and normal, not this kind of furtive, secretive, slippery behavior. Of course, actual queer people are like, finally, someone's talking about it. But for people who would like to codify that kind of behavior, it gets pretty slippery.
So what, I want to ask you too, Daniel, but Sherman, you read, there were two magazines on the whole reservation, and you read them, you were thrilled.
Thrilled.
You were, yeah.
Well, I mean, they seemed to be a positive feeling about sex.
Yeah.
I mean, in my life at that point, there was so much unhealthy sex. There was so much abuse going on to me and around me.
Yeah. And we've talked about this.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that there was the idea that there was some refuge, that my growing sexuality had a refuge in a treehouse in the woods.
Huh.
That you could go there and be positive and feel positive about it when outside of that treehouse was all this negative stuff. And so
pornography was a happy influence for
yeah,
you.
Yeah. I mean, it was, but I don't know that that's the weird conversations I have with my teenage sons now about porn, and because I know they're looking at it. And then you have these conversations about, well, you know, these general statements you make to them, like 99% of what you're going to see, my son, is not what a woman wants.
Yeah.
That does not work. That does not work.
It's not working.
That
for
does
them?
Not work. No, nobody wants that. Nobody wants that. And you know, there's and maybe five people want that, and maybe you'll meet them.
Uh-huh.
Who knows? But the conversations have so dramatically changed from when I was a kid. So I'm just keep thinking, where is that safe treehouse for kids in this generation now?
Yeah. My friend took me to the book section of the 7-Eleven, which I had not been aware of ever, that I'd never walked over there. And we stood there reading, and the 7-Eleven began to spin, and I ran outside and sat on my skateboard to throw up.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah. Do you remember your first time?
I not quite, but what I do remember is slowly realizing that a bunch of situations that I'd seen in...
By the way, when I say throw up, I don't mean I was disgusted. I mean I was just spinningly, nauseatingly thrilled. Yes.
Okay.
Just to make that clear.
Yeah, that was.
I wasn't that revolted.
I'm glad you didn't remember me.
Okay. I assumed it was
now.
A roller coaster type thing.
Yes. Think roller coaster. Yes.
Right.
Thank
and
you.
Plus all the food they serve in the 7-Eleven.
Yeah.
Yes. It was also the hot dogs and the spree.
The
now and later.
You get a slushy wrong, you're going to throw up. That's true. No, but I was confused. I was always reading above my age level, and I was often confused by adult literature and then sometimes whatever kind of adult TV or movies would come my way. I don't mean adult movies. I mean just culture that was for grown-ups, because if you're pre-sexual, all that is really mysterious. And my sister and I would be in the house alone on Saturday nights when my parents would go out, and we would watch The Love Boat every time. And I remember one day suddenly realizing, oh, they're having sex. That's why when they have dinner and he says, would you like to go back to my cabin? And she says she's not sure. It's because of sex.
Yeah, something's
at stake. Previously, I used to think you just want to hang out. I have people in my bedroom all the time. Mm-hmm. What's the big deal? Go to his cabin, don't go to his cabin. I don't understand what the big deal is. And then realizing, oh, it's because of sex. And realizing kind of incidents of infidelity and blackmail and the appearance of infidelity and also the way in which violence can be linked to sexuality in kind of domestic situations was something that I suddenly understood. So I think that gradually learning about sexuality, I don't really have a memory of like my first dirty thing, mm-hmm. but realizing what a big part of adult life it is.
Well, you,
because it's spoken of so euphemistically all the time, right? They don't say, so would you like to have a whole lot of kind of tipsy sex out here on this big boat? They say, would you like to go to my cabin?
Yeah.
And I was always thinking, I don't know.
Hard cheesy.
Right. Like, why is it suddenly a weird conversation? And that's the reason.
Have you managed, Daniel, to become someone who's not awkward about sex? You wrote a sex-filled book. Are you embarrassed?
Well, when I talk about it with my son, for instance, my mantra is, it's embarrassing. Instead of saying, there's nothing to be embarrassed about, let's just talk about it. I say, obviously, this is going to be extremely mortifying, so let's just talk about it.
Okay.
Own that it's going to be mortifying. And for me to face discomfort is, you know, one of the most powerful things you can do. And it's we're talking about it in terms of sex with this book, but I'm happy to be having the conversation tonight and now with Sherman, because I always thought with part-time Indian, the discomfort was actually displaced, as I've said. And I think that one of the things you have to do in this amnesiac kind of happy culture in which we're living is to face your own discomfort, to face your own shame about these things. And I think that Sherman's book gets banned a lot, I'm sure, in schools where there are mascots that are horrendous and no one wants to talk about it.
Sherman, what are you telling your kids about sex? How old are they, remind me?
Well, 20 and 16.
Okay. Have you introduced the 20-year-old to the concept of sex? Because it's time.
Well, kids, humans advance at different... He was crawling after girls. So, you know, he decided really early on that he loved girls.
Uh-huh.
So we had to have the conversations earlier, I think, than other people might. So, but it really is about trying to be a feminist, progressive person, parent in the midst of all this objectification of women, but also the objectification of men and then all this binary thinking about what sexuality is and gender is. So in the midst of all this public discussion, this revolutionary change in the way in which we perceive ourselves and perceive others, you end up just trying to teach your kid, you know, how to be a decent human being. But it really comes down to what Daniel said, is teaching my sons, my straight little males, my cis little males, how to be respectful and honoring of their own vulnerabilities and the vulnerabilities of everybody around them. And how do you teach them to feel positive about their own sexuality in the midst of this tsunami of change and all this negativity, where we have a president who was caught on tape horrifically objectifying women, who had all these women come forward to talk about the ways in which they had been assaulted by him, and he's the leader, in heavy quotes, of the country. So how do you?
And he said they'll let you get away with it if you're a star.
Yeah, exactly.
So you can do anything you want. You said
anything. It's incredibly complicated, and I don't think we know the extent to which human sexuality has been dramatically changed in positive and negative ways because of the huge amount of information that's instantly accessible to a kid at such an early age. I don't think we have any idea what's going to happen. And I really think in a lot of ways, boys don't have books for this. I mean, you know, when you were talking earlier, I thought, you know who else was important to me? Judy Blume.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And there was no Judy Blume for boys when I was a kid. And I don't know there's a Judy Blume for boys now.
Is there?
No. Well, I mean, Judy Blume's most sexually explicit books would still be incredibly shocking now. And I just know this because as I was finishing all the dirty parts, I went back to some of the kind of dirty books that I remembered from youth. And it's astonishing, actually, that some Judy Blume is still in print for young people. And I think it's only because some of the people we have been talking about haven't gone back and reread them. But they are not, they are still shocking. And to see the extent to which that kind of explicitness is still really absent from the culture, despite it being really present in people's lives, is pretty shocking. And it feels very Victorian, that it's definitely everywhere. In seconds overestimates how much time it would take to find something filthy on any device that you have in your hand, and yet a conversation about it and a story about it are largely absent. And I have never had much of a visual sense. Luckily, I'm married to an illustrator, so I can. That's why my house is not overcrowded with furniture or doesn't have something in front of the door, because I have a very poor visual sense. And so all the stuff that I really enjoyed sexually were all stories. And when I was in adolescence, and I think that was a nice mercy because it's often connected to a story. If you go and you read Anais Nin's diaries, she's doing a lot besides having sex, and having sex is a big part of it. But I think the context of that is interesting. And even in kind of pornography of generations past, there's always some semblance of a story. You know, Victorian pornography novels are hilarious. They always have an introduction that says, "This is a found document. It's a diary of a woman." And obviously, like, this is only being published so we can all see how dangerous it is that these kind of people exist. And then
now
100 pages of intense sexualized behavior. And it's the same with pornographic movies, right? That back in the day, they were kind of feature-length films in which it was supposedly the story of a boat ride or something, and a lot of stuff went on. And now they're clips. Now it's 45 seconds or 2 minutes of some specific activity. And I think that's, for me, that's kind of the big change. It's not necessarily the omnipresence and the explicitness, but the completely devoid of context.
Daniel Handler has written a whole book and a story called All the Dirty Parts. And he and Sherman Alexie are on stage together this evening at Town Hall Seattle. Sold out? Not sold out? You don't know.
I don't know. No.
It's not a Town Hall Seattle.
Sold out. It's
yes.
You both have sold out. Yeah.
Sold out a long time
but the
ago.
Event, sorry, to be clear, the event is at Temple to Hersh Sinai, I'm being told.
Yes.
Thus the synagogue reference. Okay, yeah. Temple to Hersh Sinai. Sherman Alexie and Daniel Handler, you may know him as Lemony Snicket. You may know him as the author of All the Dirty Parts. Thanks to both of you for coming in,
talking
sex.
Thank you for having us, sir.
Thank you.